And now let us begin the 66th chapter of Isaiah. This chapter is a continuation of the general theme and prophecy of the previous chapters. However, it does differ in that it seems to look more to the distant future of God's people and the church. As we know, the people of Judea, God's people, were taken into captivity because of their great propensity to commit idolatry. And while in that 70 years of Babylonian captivity, they learned the lesson well that idolatry was certainly a grievous sin and that God did disapprove of it. And we have no record of them actually ever going back into that state of idolatry that they did before their captivity. However, after they came out of captivity and returned to Jerusalem and rebuilt the temple, they had a great tendency to commit other sins, and particularly another sin that very muchly displeased God to the same extent that the idolatry did. Their tendency to want to depend upon pomp and ceremony and the formal rituals, the keeping of the law in the sense of the letter rather than the spirit, the practice of falling into a self-righteous attitude and being hypocritical and even to being like the Pharisees. And of thinking of the temple as being the abode and house of God, and God restricted to that area. This was the character that the nation fell into. This is the situation that existed during the time of Jesus Christ. And it seems to be this general picture that this chapter refers to, as well as to the spread and prosperity of the actual Christian church. So he begins in the first verse. Thus saith the Lord, the heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool. Where is the house that ye build unto me, and where is the place of my rest? In this verse, God plainly declares that the heaven is his throne. Now, when we think of a throne, we think of it as being the place from which a king or a ruler rules. It is his place of existence during the time that he is carrying out his reign, that he is showing his power, that he is presiding over his kingdom or his government. So he says, the heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool. A footstool is a place where one rests the feet while being seated. And he says, the earth is my footstool. So when we think of God then being so great and so supernal that he uses heaven as his throne and he uses earth as his footstool, it is impossible for us to even imagine being able to build a structure for God. And so we ask the question, where is the house that you build unto me? What house are you building for me? Where is this house? It's my house. And in view of the previous statement, no house would be sufficient to be one that's been built for God, God's habitation, God's place to exist. Where is the house that you build unto me, and where is the place of my rest? Nobody would, in view of what he said, dare imply that an earthly structure had been built that would be sufficient to contain God. And that's the point that he's getting over here. Not that the temple was not a holy place and was not intended by him to be used as a holy place, but to think that this was the place that God was going to be confined to, that this was the place that God would have to dwell in and do all of his reigning from, was beyond the scope of God's true plan. God's true plan eventually would go far beyond the temple. For as we know, the temple had been destroyed, and it was to be destroyed again. It would again be destroyed in on subsequent occasions. Particularly the one I'm thinking of is AD 70. So this is the question here. Now, as we think of earth and heaven being the habitation of God, we think that this is quite possibly what Jesus had in mind when he quoted, or when he stated in Matthew 5, 34 and 35, "But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, neither by earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king." Here Jesus very likely was teaching with this passage in mind as he made the statement about heaven being the throne of God and earth being the footstool of God. As we think about the temple being inadequate to be the house or the abode of God, it brings to mind a statement made by Solomon in 1 Kings 8:27. Solomon made this statement after he had built the original temple. He says, "But will God indeed dwell on the earth? Behold, the heaven and the heaven of heavens cannot contain thee, how much less this house that I have builded." So even Solomon, after erecting the temple, fully realized and recognized the fact that this was not a place where God would have to be contained, that God would not limit himself to this building, that the heaven of heavens are the habitation of God. This same idea is expressed in Acts 20, verse 24. "God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands, as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things." This is a statement by Paul, and showing that God is the Lord of heaven and earth, and he dwelleth not in temples made with hands. Very simple statement. A truth that the Jewish people did not fully comprehend at the time they were digressing from God and placing pomp and ceremony and rituals higher than having a contrite and humbled heart. Now this is a lesson even more magnified and important to us today, when we in the church realize that we do not even have a temple at Jerusalem like the Jewish nation had. Consequently, we must not fall into the fallacy of thinking that we are to build a great edifice and somehow or other that's going to be holy and God's going to dwell there and we're going to be given credit and acclaim and praise by God for doing such a thing. These so-called sanctuaries, these houses that are built by religions today, must realize that God has no more reason to dwell there and to be there than he does any other structure, regardless of how humble or how unattractive it may seem to be. All of these structures that really have a basic theme of some of the old idolatrous practices, such as the displaying of crosses, displaying of images that are nothing short of being idolatry, the great magnificent noise that's made by the organs or other instruments inside of them, they are following very much after the same pattern of Israel in the fact that they are relying upon pomp, ceremony, great show to prove then that they have God and that God dwells there. And this simply is not true. This has a reference to some time of the rebuilding of the temple. This verse 1 does. Quite possibly it's the rebuilding of the temple by Herod. But the important thing here is that God is condemning this spirit of man depending upon material things to show that he then is a righteous person or persons or nation, and that God necessarily is going to have to dwell and be there. Verse 2. For all those things hath mine hand made, and all those things have been, saith the Lord. Now, he's talking about heaven and earth here. My hand made heaven and earth. All these great and majestic things that he has described, the heaven and the earth, in verse 1, my hand made those things. Now, I don't dwell in houses that are made with men's hands. My hands have made a sufficient habitation and abode for me. So as we compare this verse with the things that man would make, we can see how that man cannot possibly do anything that would compare with what God has done and what God is satisfied to call his dwelling. But to this man will I look, even to him that is poor and of a contrite spirit and trembleth at my word. Now, he says, I've made my own house. But the thing that's going to take my eye, the man to whom I'm going to look, but to this man will I look, will I pay attention, will I give my time and effort, is even to him that is poor and of a contrite spirit. Now, this word for poor, as I understand it by the translators, is not truly translated properly. It should not really be poor, but it should be more humble. The humble man. But even if it were truly translated as poor, let us make the point that poverty alone is not a virtue. He doesn't just stop saying that he pays attention to the poor man, but he says it's even to him that is poor and of a contrite spirit. And this word poor then meaning humble, it should read, he that is humble and of a contrite spirit. Now the person who is humble and of a contrite spirit is not going to be building up some edifice and taking pride in that and using that as his source of glory and his source of righteousness. That's not going to be his attitude at all. A humble person is one who is not filled with any kind of pride. He's completely devoid of pride. He realizes that he is a person who is in need of something. He realizes that he has weaknesses and shortcomings, and that he is very muchly inferior when it comes to God and the things of God. So, even him that is humble and of a contrite spirit. Now, this word contrite means to be broken, crushed, beaten, or trodden down. So, to have a contrite spirit is to have a spirit that is one that has been broken, one that has been crushed, one that has no haughtiness, no pride, no sense of self-value at all. And this kind of a spirit, then, is the one that attracts God. God looks to this kind of a spirit. This spirit says, I am in need. I am a sinner. Be merciful to me, O God. I need thy help. This is a spirit that's seeking and searching.